some minor adjustments. I first moved to Colorado in May of 2014, 1 week after graduating from seminary. I packed all I could fit in two very large suitcases and shipped many, too many books. As soon as I arrived, I started UU church dating, maybe familiar to some of you, hoping to find my church home in this new chapter, longing for that moment when you walk through the doors and feel welcomed like an unexpected guest. I wanted to be inspired but also challenged. I was searching for people to share this wild and beautiful and challenging journey of life with. I did find my church home. It was one of the UU churches in Denver, and I joined right at the moment we welcomed Arturo Hernandez Garcia into Sanctuary. They had just voted to be a sanctuary church, much like us here, opening their modest basement to someone who chose to resist his deportation, courageously fighting to keep his family together, his wife and two U.S. citizen children by his side. I felt called, and by that I mean I felt my heart tugged to participate in this movement of people of faith and conscience. I felt called, profoundly and undeniably pulled, to participate in this faithful response to injustice that was grounded in our principles and our claim that all have inherent worth and dignity, and grounded in the belief in families and the love that holds them together. Arturo lived at the church for 9 months, and I dove in with many other congregants of all ages, each being called, each heart tugged to join in this work. We worked hard together, and it was beautiful. And it was also often so frustrating and so hard. This experience is what inspired me to finally pursue ministry in our faith, and it also drove me crazy often. Yes, there were many exciting and extra special moments, rallies and press conferences on the steps of the church, news outlets knocking on the door, the moment Arturo felt the freedom of leaving the church to go home. But most of those 9 months were made up of the most ordinary of moments. Long meetings and even longer email chains, beautiful babies crying as part of our experience together, always, thankfully. Photocopies. Someone getting upset that they didn't have the right agenda for the meeting. Another person frustrated that this other person brought styrofoam plates to the meeting. Maybe it resonates. Potlucks and cleaning up after potlucks. Spreadsheets and small talk. All of the most ordinary of moments. The buzz of urgency and newness gave way to the day, today, today. I remember talking to a friend one afternoon while sitting in my car in the parking lot, processing my frustration aloud about the person who brought the styrofoam plates to the meeting, because that was me. I was the one that was frustrated. And it did feel almost like a confession. The windows were closed, and I was sitting in the back seat of my car. I was so frustrated that this group I was a part of with such huge and important work wasn't moving in lockstep. Things weren't seamless. We were struggling to communicate. I was frustrated that people weren't acting in the ways I wanted them to. Disappointed in something I couldn't even quite name. And I said, sort of exasperated, we're all just so human. We're all just so human. This is our second Sunday in our series, Church of Humanity. And for multiple weeks in a row, we're leaning into this, knowing that when we come together in human community, we both inspire each other and disappoint each other. We mend one another's hearts and break them open again. We make commitments to each other and then break them and wrestle with what it means to recommit again. Every couple of months, Sean and I lead our newcomer class. Gretchen mentioned it earlier. We call it Base Camp. At the very end of the class, after a day and a half of inspiring conversation about courageous love, after deep sharing and listening, budding friendships, and rising excitement about Unitarian Universalism and Foothills, we always pause to say that we are going to disappoint you, that you are going to disappoint each other, that we are going to disappoint each other. The energy always shifts in the room right at that moment, as if we just said the thing that you're not supposed to say. But who started the rumor that disappointment and frustration and irritation and heartbreak aren't a part of being in community, of being in relationship? In his book, Unexpected Gifts, Discovering the Way of Community, Chris Huertz writes, though we hate to admit it, if we stay long enough in any relationship or set of friendships, we will experience failure, doubt, burnout, loneliness, transitions, a loss of self, betrayal, frustration, a sense of entitlement, grief, and weariness. Yet, he says, it's these painful community experiences, these tensions we struggle to navigate, that hold surprising gifts. It's also at Base Camp when I get an opportunity to hear the reasons why people come to Foothills, each person with a different story, but often landing somewhere that says, I'm looking for community. And I often hear that as, I'm looking for connection. I'm looking to be seen and to try to see others. I want to learn to love in friendship, but also to love myself and all life around us. I want my actions to align with my values, my truest self, and I need help with that. We long for community because we're meant for it. We are a social species. Our brain and biology literally pushing us toward connection and communicating that something isn't quite right when we're living in disconnection. And many of us have many communities, our families, the people we move in and out of each day with. There's also our community at work or school, friendships, our recovery community or grief group, and here at our church. We are a community too. So What if in this practice of community, when these moments of frustration and disappointment arise, as they will, we can know that they are not only inevitable and unavoidable, but that hidden within them are these unexpected gifts? Which does remind me of the styrofoam plates. I remember it. It's possible that as we gathered that night around a table to share a meal, that I reacted quickly, calling out the person who brought the styrofoam plates in front of everyone, allowing a surge of emotion to fly through the air and almost knocked the person over. Or maybe I said nothing at the time, which is why I later needed the Toyota confessional booth while on the phone with a friend. Maybe you can relate. And probably, if I didn't say anything at the time, I likely was a little annoyed with this person in the meeting for the whole time. Maybe you can relate to that too. I see some nods. But what I didn't do was I didn't call this person in. I didn't say, "I'm noticing that I'm really frustrated that you brought styrofoam plates. I know it might seem like a small thing, but as a community, we've named our commitment as stewards to the more than human life around us, which I know is important to you too. Can we brainstorm ways we might change this moving forward?" I didn't do that. Choosing to call each other in instead of calling each other out is language often connected to an organization called Showing Up for Racial Justice, or SURGE. SURGE is made up of groups and individuals working specifically to get more white folks involved in racial justice. And in this work, many people started to notice a pattern, where one white person who had a little bit more awareness and an ability to talk about race and racism was calling out other white folks in a group for not being as aware and able, maybe reacting in a way that was shaming and isolating. And so, with a vision to build community and a culture specifically among white folks doing racial justice work, SURGE said, "We value calling people in instead of calling people out, because in this moment and in this time, we need more people to be brought into this work. We need more people to stay." Calling in as opposed to calling out recognizes that we all make mistakes, that notions of perfection keep us in disconnection and prevent relationship. Calling in knows that there is this larger love that has space for our learning and our unlearning, for our forgetting and our remembering. Calling in says, "Come, join me in this work of life. I call you back into the circle, and I hope you will call me in too when I need it." I know that the ways we fail one another in community, in family, with friends, in church, come in lots of different sizes. And calling each other in isn't always the right option. But sometimes it is the right option. And it is a choice we can make in the midst of those sandpaper moments of community, when we feel the friction of relationship, when we're irritated by a loved one, when we're disappointed by someone we're in relationship with. Because when these moments happen, there truly is an invitation to involve ourselves in the relationship, an invitation to involve ourselves in community, to pause, to breathe, and to say, to speak directly, and to say, "It really bothered me when you brought the styrofoam plates last week." Or, "I'm wondering if we can talk about what you just said. The words you used are hurtful to a lot of people I really care about." Calling each other in begins with listening to ourselves and asks us to speak directly to one another, inviting ourselves and another to remember our shared values we might have as a couple or family, or our agreements or commitments as a group, or our covenant as a church. For some of us, the choice to call each other in is distinct because your tendency is to call someone out. But for others of us, the choice to call each other in is distinct because you would normally remain silent. There are a lot of reasons, a lot of good reasons, why many of us have learned to be silent when there's tension. Many of us think when annoyance or agitation or disappointment show up in community that there's something wrong. And the tension of saying something can all be so uncomfortable. But what if some of that is a false story? What if these are important and valuable moments in community? And what if love is uncomfortable? Not always, of course, and not in total, but sometimes, yes. Love is sometimes uncomfortable. Which does bring me back to those unexpected gifts of these exact moments in community. The moments when we call each other in, or when we are called in and we stay. The gifts of forgiveness, of renewal, of restoration, of deepening connection, of more honesty and more truth, of growth, of change and transformation, of seeing each other and being seen, of being loved right where we are and called into an even better version of ourselves, of reminders that the sacred lives in the most ordinary of moments, like our poem that Lenny read, the eyes of a poet, a good teacher for living in community. The eyes that illuminate the sacredness, the gifts within the most ordinary. When you look closely at people, I recently heard Glennon Doyle say, when you look closely at people, you end up loving them. As we practice with this closeness in the smallest of moments with one another, we will be more prepared when there is a larger rupture. As we practice expressing how we feel directly, practice being in tension, practice staying connected to the fullness of the person across from us, as we practice inviting them to stay in the work of relationship and community, we strengthen the muscle for when the bigger moments come, as they have for each of us, and as they will. For those moments when the pauses are longer and the breaths are deeper, and we say to a loved one, I was so deeply hurt by what you said. Or, I'm feeling so angry that you lied to me. And it's true, we don't get to control what the other person says or how they respond and act. But the next time we have an experience where someone is calling us into accountability, we'll have even more insight when it's our turn to speak again. And on, taking turns, reminding each other that love persists, that our lives are sacred, that our stories are holy, and that even in the coldest days of winter, love pushes forward, insistent and glorious. May it be so. Amen.